Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Tonight, Wednesday, the 23rd of June, 2010. Now, I want to thank all of you for tuning in this evening, and you can thank yourself. We've got another exciting broadcast this evening, and it's part four in our If an Agent Comes Knocking broadcast series. Now, as usual, you are expected always to be ready to take notes while listening to the Hour of the Time, because unlike the bulk of the broadcasters out there who are infotainment, we are solution-oriented. So you need to take notes, ladies and gentlemen. Again, tonight, part four, If an Agent Comes Knocking, giving you advice and tips and tricks on what are your legal rights and how to avoid infiltration, human surveillance, electronic surveillance, sneak and peek searches, all the activities that go on now, supposedly legal, as it might be told to you, that aren't, and how to avoid those pitfalls, fight back, because they are going to be ever increasing in the very near future, ladies and gentlemen. Very much so. You're going to see it escalate a lot more than it's already occurring. Now, before we move on, though, we got some announcements and, of course, the contact information. If you'd like to write the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com. That is hourofthetime.com. And the studio number in Arizona, 928-333-2942. And the studio number in Canada, 613-733-4324. Now, if you'd like to ask questions, productive questions, of course, or share research, or send hate mail, you can email me directly, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. That's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of announcements. We had a delay in our DVDs from the production facility and warehousing to the studio in Eager. So we were delayed. We try to turn around all donations that go towards orders in our hot shop around within a day or two. We had to delay some of you, unfortunately, about 8 to 11 days. Those have gone out now, I'm pleased to announce. So a little bonus went in, audio bonus and PDF reading material, research material bonus disc went out, and all your people who had to wait a little more than normal, okay, to get yours. It was simply just supplies getting to us. It wasn't intentional. But I do want to apologize for that. And it is out and on their way. And that was only just a handful of people that were affected. Unfortunately, though, it's still more than we like. So, again, my sincere apologies for that. About a 10, 11-day delay for some of you. Now, also, our research offer this evening. Many of you may remember the 68th Convocation Rose Cross Order. Now, those were essentially just a book compiled of a meeting of the Rose Cross Order, and really the from the 68th Convocation, okay? Hierophant of the Order, if you will, and that's exactly how they turned it. And it's a report that came out, and it was a resume, basically, of the proceedings of the convocation, with the most, what they felt, were the most important messages and lectures delivered during the time of the convocation by the delegates present. And it covers a report, in fact, on the work of the ancient initiation in the Grove of Osiris. And this comes, if you didn't know this already, Bill did quite a big broadcast on it, Rosicrucian Fraternity, 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross Order from 1916. Tonight's research offer, ladies and gentlemen, is a PDF, a very high-quality PDF of an original 1916 version. Now, Bill had taken the broadcast from that original book, and you can even see explanations of the Great Seal of the United States and their explanation of it. Also, like I say, these initiation ceremonies in the Grove of Osiris and several other lectures are very important to you researchers in the mystery schools, the Mystery Babylon, the secret societies, and the symbolism for you real researchers. Now, don't just email me to tie up time because it's a huge PDF because you think it'd be neat to have. Okay, I already get a ton of emails I have to personally answer every day. Okay, if you're a serious researcher, though, we want to help. Solution-oriented programming here at Hour of the Time. And research, not rumor crap like most of the broadcasters spew out there. Email me, hourthetime@hotmail.com, and that is the research offer today. Or this evening, and that offer is good tonight and tonight only as a thank you to those of you tuning in to each new and live broadcast at our primetime slot. Don't email me in a month if this is reran wanting the book. It's tonight and tonight only, Wednesday the 23rd of June, 2010. Now, a lot of you wanting to learn about the ancient magic circles, the stones, the nectar of roses, and all of a lot of the Beverly Hall, the Feast of the Gods, etc., the American Beauty, and that's a rose symbol, by the way, to them. Many of you might remember a movie with both of those titles, two different movies about a generation apart, The Mystic Ring, The Magic Mirror, okay, Ritualistic Occultism, The Feast of the Gods at Midnight, and the Grove of Osiris, of course. So this is a wonderful research tool for those of you. And like I say, it's our thanks, our attempt every night to do that. And I think a lot of you will also be intrigued by the their official explanation of the Great Seal and its mystic significance. Out of their own mouths, ladies and gentlemen, the Soul Science Primer, the Order of the Illuminati, Purification, Illumination, Mastership. A wonderful book and hard for collectors to get hold of, an original volume. So you ought to settle for a PDF. Most of you probably have never read it anyway, so I think you'll be happy. Again, email me directly for that, hourthetime@hotmail.com. Now, I am glad to offer that, and my apologies again about the delayed orders, because that DVD shipment to get to us here in Eager, and it's no one's fault in the operation at all. Okay, after this musical break, be prepared to take notes, a brief recap of the third portion in this series, the third broadcast in this series, where we left off as far as human eavesdropping, infiltration, and human surveillance, and moving into electronic surveillance, and how it is used quite often by agencies or representatives of the federal government, typically, but all levels, really, and how it can be used against you in your effort that is legal, peaceable, to assemble and try to restore our constitutional republic, and how you can fight back and protect yourself after this musical break. ladies and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, Wednesday, the 23rd of June, 2010. Tonight's offer, email me directly tonight and tonight only, hourofthetime@hotmail.com, for fundamental laws, and as is better known, the 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross, a wonderful research PDF. A thank you from us to you for tuning in live and being a part of the solution, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we left off in the third installment in this broadcast series concerning evidence of infiltration. How do you determine that? Precautions you can take. Now, evidence of infiltration. I can tell you that somebody that comes in out of the blue and is overly enthusiastic, and you hate to stymie somebody's enthusiasm. They may have just quote-unquote woke up, but it's often a very good indicator if they don't come in wanting to do the crappy grunt work. If their enthusiasm is all geared towards paperwork that contains group records, activities in the past, future dates and activities, schedules, email lists, membership lists, addresses, phone numbers, places of work, that is a definite sign, a common tactic. Now don't, just because someone fits certain of these characteristics we're discussing, don't just necessarily assume that they're an undercover agent or informant automatically. Use caution, okay? That can be very damaging to yourself, your group, and your movement, and could even involve lawsuits, depending on how you did it incorrectly. But look at this and keep track of this, okay? Does the person often encourage the use or urge the use of violence or illegal tactics? Do they constantly accuse others that have been there that you do trust? Does a new person out of the blue say, hey, you know what? I think we should have a get-together to build flamethrowers right after I'm done updating the membership list that you guys are going to give me so I can help you out. And so-and-so over there never does anything as far as I'm concerned. Okay, now that's, of course, a giant example, but you'd be amazed how stupid some people are, and they do come off that blatantly. I've seen it with my own eyes. So try to dig a little. You have the right to. You already have bylaws, quite, and you should at least. You have maybe a mission statement if you like to do things like that, but you probably have certain organizational protocols, okay? SOP, standard operating procedures for your group. And simply tell them, membership is up to the voting board. We vote in private whether you're allowed in or not. But have that all done ahead of time. But verify if you suspect someone as being an infiltrator, an informant, an agent, after strong evidence. Then do a little checking in the background. Public records, credit reports, voter registration, mortgages, past and present addresses, local police academy graduates. Look at police academy and agency graduates from where they purport to be from. Check out their past employers, just like you were interviewing them, and checking out their resume, if you will, for a job interview. Remember, you have to concern for the good of your community and your cause of freedom and the safety of those around you. You really have an obligation to do those things. So don't feel ashamed about having to do it. You're protecting your core leadership, membership, board members, and people who really do care about preserving and furthering and reestablishing all our freedoms. Now, if you want to also take precautions, which you always should, to protect your organization, maintain a file of suspected or confirmed experiences of surveillance and disruption. Date, place, time, who was present, the best description taken as soon, done as soon, can't stress that enough, as possible after the incident of what happened. What impact did that experience have upon an individual in your membership or your organization or the organization as a whole itself? Discuss at a meeting amongst members in good standing, which you ought to define in your SOP or bylaws or whatever you choose to call them. What is a member in good standing? Define it. discuss your experience of harassment and surveillance activities that appear to be directed at the activities of your organization, or difficulties in your group and suspicious activities, and try to determine if there's a pattern establishing itself. Is one person always there when it happens that isn't a member in good standing in your group but closely hangs out? Is a given organization or representative from an organization always around when you are harassed or subterfuged? I would also even do FOIAs. They're a blast to do and hammer people with facts. Just ask for the information. Use, in the case of state, county, local, municipalities, your freedom of information laws or public records requests, as they're typically called. But don't allow paranoia to infiltrate and paralyze your movement or organization. It can be as destructive, if not more so, paranoia, as the actual infiltration itself. I have seen it with my own eyes. It leads to accusations, infighting, lack of productive work, lack of a proactive, forward-moving agenda amongst your organization or agendas or group. Okay? So think about all that, ladies and gentlemen. I have seen some wonderful people completely taken down, literally, their life taken from them, or physically, or in the sense of being thrown away in a prison or a jail, or groups completely dismantled and tore apart, all from paranoia and finger-pointing. That is what, ladies and gentlemen, enemies of freedom love to have happen. They don't risk discovery of their motives and operations. They don't have to risk a lawsuit from you and your organization. They don't have to risk that you expose them and let everybody in the damn region, if not United States and world, know who they are and pictures of them, blowing an operation. They can allow you to self-destruct, and that happens a lot, ladies and gentlemen. Keep it in mind, I can tell you for a fact, it happened in CAGI and IS, both, a lot. And a lot of chapters and station chiefs and their organizations and stations, if you will, completely fell apart due to sheer paranoia, and that was it. So, ladies and gentlemen, take that advice. Trust me, it's healthy. Now, after this next musical break, we're going to cover some of the electronic surveillance that goes on, and in telephone communications, phone taps, Title III wiretap orders. How do you know if you're being tapped? PIN registers, tap and trace devices, bugs, removing a wiretap, and also Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and the National Security Agency's warrantless wiretapping program. A lot of information, ladies and gentlemen, and this helps you not only be solution-oriented, but distill the facts from the infotainment out there. Thank you. again, your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time, Wednesday, the 23rd of June, 2010. Part 4 in our broadcast series, If an Agent Comes Knocking. And don't forget tonight's offer, for those of you tuning in new and live, and tonight only, Fundamental Laws or 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross. Email me directly. Just ask for the Rose Cross. You don't have to type all that out. Just say Rose Cross PDF, and I'll know what you need. Email me at hourthetime@hotmail.com. Now, what we're going to talk about now, you know, wiretaps, bugs, internet surveillance, etc. And just think about it this way, ladies and gentlemen. As you allow your life to become ever more digitized, if you will, agents are increasingly using electronic surveillance to collect information, to sift through data and create dossiers. And unfortunately, the laws and courts usually fail to keep up with the pace of technology. And that often leads to unknown or diminished privacy protection for the latest technologies available. Now, a good rule of thumb to maintain, and we do this at Hour of the Time, is the older the means of communication, the more protection the law affords it. The older the means of communication, the more protection the law affords it. When Mr. Elliot Spitzer was New York State Attorney General, he said something that you ought to heed. Quote, never write when you can talk, never talk when you can nod, and never put anything in an email because it's death. You're giving prosecutors all the evidence we need. End quote. Mr. Elliot Spitzer, former New York State Attorney General. Now, phone conversations, we'll start there. They can be intercepted in a variety of ways. Taps to bugs to roving wiretaps, pin registers, trap and trace devices. Methods of telephone surveillance are detailed and complex. So this is only a cursory overview this evening, but being that I know right where to buy the equipment legally to do every bit of these, I know that it can be done, and actually quite inexpensively, no matter what the poor agency's budget restrictions are. Okay, basically, the main lesson here is, like the quote we just discussed, and the key points of using the older technologies always, just be careful about what you say on any phone. Any phone. I don't care what technology you think you have that's ahead of everybody else. And the government generally needs a special warrant called a Title III wiretap order, look it up, to tap your phone. A Title III wiretap order. Okay? But guess what? Under what they deem certain emergency situations involving serious injury, national security, immediate death, characteristics of organized crime, RICO, which is so stupid and one of the most perverse acts ever on our books, prior to any authorized surveillance or Title III wiretap order, an agency can, guess what, tap your phone for 48 hours prior to anything filled out, done, requested, whatever. So even if their wiretap Title III order gets denied, they still have 48 hours of listening in on you. So remember that, ladies and gentlemen. They are the warrants, these Title III wiretap orders, used to intercept and monitor your communications. Okay? Now, you have the Fourth Amendment protections requiring search warrants for most searches. Okay? Now, Congress had provided additional protections regarding oral communications in Title III. Okay? But guess where this was at? Title III of the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. If you have done any research whatsoever, ladies and gentlemen, especially around the firearms freedom field, you will be very familiar with the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. Now, these so-called protections were passed in response two congressional findings of widespread illegal and abusive surveillance. Okay, again, we discussed this in an earlier broadcast in the series, but see or listen back to what are the limits of what undercover agents and informants can do. I think it was the second one in this series, ladies and gentlemen. Now, an application for Title III wiretap order by any agent or agency is a lengthy process as far as filling it out. Facts regarding the crime that has been or is about to be committed have to be listed in detail. The place from which communications will be intercepted. The communications sought to be intercepted. Have other investigative tools been utilized and were inadequate? They can prove that they were inadequate. Were other tools inadequate or too dangerous to apply? The time frame for all telephone interceptions to occur, and a statement on all previous applications concerning the same target or premises or investigation. Okay? Then the judge must find, to issue a Title III wiretap order, probable cause that the target is committing a crime actually covered under Title III of the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. That communication concerning the crime will be obtained by the interceptors and the interception. That the facilities from which communication will be intercepted are being used in connection with said crime. The judge has to determine all this, okay? Now, originally, again, the Title III only permitted surveillance for a very narrow category of very serious crimes. And, of course, over the years, Congress has added and added and added more and more crimes to Title III coverage. Now, the law today, from its inception in 1968, covers literally hundreds of what they call crimes. And very broad categories, mind you, such as drugs, riots, obscenity, interference with commerce. Those are some of the very broad categories that outside of their delegation of authority, outside of an act of Congress assembled, outside of their jurisdictional venue, have been added illegally. Okay? So what this has done is these broad categories over the years by your socialist Congress and usurpation of our republic and freedoms has allowed this to be expanded like RICO into an all-encompassing act to be abused. Okay? Now, initially, Title III wiretap orders last up to 30 days. But continually, after they're approved, they can just keep going back to the same judge for repeated 30-day extensions. Okay? Now, after the expiration, either the judge does not re-extend it, or they just quit asking for extensions, or they're done in their initial 30-day window, the judge can order the agency to disclose an inventory of all intercepted communications to the targets of the wiretap. That's right. And this inventory then informs the targets of the time period of the wiretap and whether communications were actually intercepted. Now, the judge can also choose, however, to not even require that an inventory be issued. But guess what? An inventory is taken of all communications, what was discussed, and who was involved in that investigation and those interceptions under Title III wiretap order. So the inventory is there. And if you have suspicion or strong evidence or total evidence that it's occurred to you, you may go request those documents even. Okay? Now, generally, though, quite honestly, if you look statistically, it's a fairly rare practice right now for so-called law enforcement to seek wiretap orders. But guess what? They almost always get them approved when they do ask for them. Now, of normal Title III wiretap orders, you got to keep all the different categories separate, ladies and gentlemen. In 2007, for example, 2,208 applications for Title III wiretap orders were submitted to all state, federal, and courts. And guess what, though? 100% were approved. Okay. 1,792 of those out of the 2,208, which comes out to 81%, involved narcotics. Okay, that huge category, though. And everything that surrounds narcotics, okay? The next high in highest category being homicide and assault cases, 132 out of 2,208 total, or 6%. So 81% narcotics, 6% homicides and assaults. So you see quickly where the bulk of it is, but the categories are so broad, and the abuse of this along with the RICO, so-called RICO statutes, 81% being involved with narcotics covered a lot of area and ground. Okay, now how do you know, though? Now that you know some dates and background and statistics, what are some ways to know if your phone is being tapped? And more than likely, you won't know, ladies and gentlemen. Surveillance from agencies has taken great leaps and strides since the days of clicks and beeps and buzzing and all the other funny sounds that would tip you off to a wiretap in the old days of old, okay? The government is generally supposed to tell you within 90 days after the surveillance ends. 90-day window after it ends. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen? The notification can be postponed with actual relative ease by the agency. So you may not be ever told at all, but if you do have a tip-off, you have a suspicion of what judge would have issued the order, you can certainly write the judge in the court for an inventory, as it's called, okay, of your Title III wiretap order issued against you. I would suggest having good evidence before you walk in there. You may have strong evidence, but do you really have it in order? Okay? Can you really relay that evidence in writing, and in writing only, certified mail, return receipt, the whole nine yards, and witnessed and notarized, mind you, your request? Make sure it is in good, logical order. Because if you're turned down for sloppy work, it's kind of like crying wolf, and the clerk that gets your next request and your next request, and you keep trying to clean it up a little bit more, clean it up a little more, starts ignoring your request really quickly. And you can scream and cry, that ain't fair, it's not legal, all you want. You're right, it isn't. But guess what? We're talking reality, ladies and gentlemen. Not your daydream world. Okay? The color of law and what's lawful are two entirely different things. What's legal and lawful are different things. So, this takes us into a roving wiretap. Typically, a wiretap, a Title III wiretap order, is applied to a very specific phone and number at a specific location after it's been authorized through a court order, mind you, with almost a surety of 100% approval. A roving wiretap, guess what? Is a tap on any phone at any location from which the agency believes the target could be making a call from. That is huge, ladies and gentlemen. They've been allowed for government agency use since 1998. Now, the government is supposed to meet the same standard for a roving wiretap as they do the regular. Probable cause, blah, 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 blah. So we've already covered all that. Okay? Just so you know, the two categories of them. That would then carry on to your cell phone, a friend's house that they can prove you frequent, and their numbers, your work phone. You see what I'm saying? It goes on and on and on. Now, what's a bug? People ask about that. Okay? A bug is simply a small or miniaturized electronic device that can overhear, broadcast, or record a conversation. Having a bug placed in your home or office allows an agency to listen in on everything that is said within the device's range. Now, the requirements governing the use of bugs are generally, the same as those for wiretaps. Okay? Now, the use of bugs, though, has presents, by mind you, some inherent difficulties for an agency. They have to be installed within a target location. They're prone to malfunction. There is a fairly, a decent risk of discovery. They can be rendered useless by electrical interference, whether that's on purpose from you or accidental. Just your work environment, your home environment, equipment. Leaking, it's called. Stray radio waves and stray electrical interference. It's called leakage or leaking by the FCC. Okay, so bugs are used to a lesser degree than wiretaps. Okay? It's just a sheer matter of how it works. Okay? The technology, though, for those is going farther and farther all the time. Now, people might ask, because I mentioned earlier, and we're going to cover it here, what is a pin register or tap and trace? What are those? Tap and traces or pin registers? A pin register device simply records the numbers dialed from a telephone line to which this device is attached. You can buy them at several places. And trap and trace devices record the telephone numbers of incoming calls. Now, if you were under considerable harassment from some landlord or a person threatening you or an ex-spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend or boss or coworker or whatever, you can go down and ask for a telephone trap from your local police chief and police, typically investigator, detective, sergeant, lieutenant. There's a chain of command at every police station and agency to help you. I'm not saying go and do it. I'm just telling you. It's an item, and it's called a telephone trap. Again, that trap and trace device records the telephone numbers and times of incoming calls. But due to the ever-encroaching bureaucracy and illegal spying by agencies upon the population here in the United States, phone companies, internet companies, etc., cellular, landline, it doesn't matter, typically buckle to an agency's request for records and just hand them the whole damn bill, everything your line ever did that month or 6 months or 10 months or a year or 5 years history. And oftentimes they've been caught just doing it because they figure, oh, it must be legal. They asked for it without even a court order, subpoena, warrant, anything. So keep that in mind. Okay. But a court order is required if an agency wants to install and use either device. But they're very easy to obtain, not only the devices but the court orders. Okay. They only need to believe the agency that is. Only need to believe that the information likely to be attained is kind of relevant to some ongoing criminal investigation. So you see how broad it is and how easy. And judges and law enforcement, or just agencies in general from government bodies, typically take a very broad view of what is likely to be relevant to an ongoing investigation. Okay? And some states even allow the surveillance under even more lax standards. And they'll take advantage of that, various agencies. Now, because so many people can rig and fake and outright lie, it doesn't have to be an agency doing this to you even. So keep that in mind. Private organizations will do these against you. It may not be legal, but they'll do it and get what they need on you. Okay? Now, the U.S. Attorney General can, in certain emergency situations, authorize the use of these devices up to 7 days prior to even seeking an order from a judge. And again, they define emergency and relevant and investigation in a very broad sense. Now, of course, the Patriot Act that we've discussed at length here at the Hour of the Time expanded the permitted use of both pin registers and trap and trace devices. Okay? Some of the extensions of either pin registers or trap and trace devices, including tracking the physical locations of a cell phone or user, recording addresses of websites you visit, the IP addresses that your computer connects to, the IP addresses of computers that connect to your computer, okay? And your IP is just your unique number assigned to each computer or device that connects to a network, if you didn't know that. I'm sure most of you did, but save me an email possibly later, a question. So the Patriot Act greatly, greatly expanded the use of PIN registers and trap and trace devices. So we wanted to cover that and make sure you understand what those are and that they are out there and available. If there is some interest, serious interest from those of you in the listening audience as we continue, we're about to wrap up this broadcast series, but I could give you some tools in a future broadcast as to tools in the sense of firms, warehouses, suppliers of where to get these or build your own even, okay? And I don't mean goofy, crazy stuff that takes a degree in electronics to figure out. Kits that are pre-done. You're just putting the last step together and that makes them legal to be sold as a kit for, of course, research and informational purposes only. If there's a real legitimate interest, email me and let me know that. I can give you some sources in a broadcast down the way in this series, which is coming to an end real soon. Now, after this break, we're going to cover some more on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and the NSA's, National Security Agency's, warrantless wiretapping programs. Ladies and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. Tonight, Wednesday, the 23rd of June, 2010, with another broadcast here tonight, broadcast four in our series, If an Agent Comes Knocking. tonight's special offer, tonight and tonight only, Convocation, 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross Order. Just write 68th Convocation, Rose Cross PDF, something to do with that, and I'll know that you would desire that. Email me directly, hourthetime@hotmail.com. If you are into research, you will love this book. That is a exact original 1916 edition, and I'm not going to tear mine out and apart because I own an original edition. That's where Bill got it from for the air, in fact, the airtime, that very broadcast, 68th Convocation of Rose Cross. It's too old and rare and fragile to scan. I found a PDF from the Rosicrucian Research Library scanned one of their original 1916 volumes. So again, tonight and tonight only, email me for that. Now, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Courts and the NSA, National Security Agency's warrantless wiretapping programs. There's not much to be said here because your hands are tied and theirs aren't. Okay? The government agencies using these programs, like the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, okay, via the National Security Agency is another way, can wiretap both citizens and non-citizens, as they call it, if there is probable cause to believe the target is a member of a foreign terrorist group or an agent of a foreign power, or an investigation against a foreign power or terrorist group is ensuing, and you may have info that will help them in that investigation. Okay? Now, what they define as citizens and lawful permanent residents, the government has to demonstrate probable cause that the target is engaged in activities that may, mind you, involve a criminal violation. Okay? The government has to attain a search warrant from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And guess what? It's a secret court in which all hearings and records are closed to the public. Now, the agency, via the National Security Agency, the NSA, claims their authority to warrantlessly monitor any telephone or any electronic communication, if it even believes one party is located outside of the U.S., even if all the other parties are inside the U.S. Okay? Now, the NSA is technically only authorized to monitor communications for purposes of obtaining foreign intelligence. The actual full scope of the program is unknown, but we can make some pretty good assumptions, ladies and gentlemen, based on historical evidence and research. That's all there is really to cover on that, because your hands are tied, theirs aren't. So, what is going to affect you more? Let's look at security threats of cell phones, smartphones, PDAs, etc. Tons of people, and I don't know why, love the convenience and ease of cell phone communications. Guess what? It comes with huge privacy and security risks, however. And you have to realize that. I laugh at the people when they lecture me at some speaking engagement about how in tune they are with the struggle to reestablish all our freedoms, or what a strong patriot they are, and then say, oh, hold up, I got to take this call and jump on their cell phone. Dumb. Okay. You have to be aware of all the risk inherent in this, and as I've said before, when you're in a prison camp, take that pocket full of convenience that the cell phone provided you with and try to buy your way out before you're shot in the head. Okay? You better weigh the risk in using any of these devices against the convenience and the benefit to you. Okay? Before any cell phone, PDA, smartphones, whatever are used. Okay? Now, technically, the same legal rules that apply to landlines apply to getting a tap, pin register, or trap and trace device for a cell phone. But it's important, ladies and gentlemen, that you fully understand, however, that anyone with a few hundred dollars of equipment can intercept all of your cell phone signals. And you shouldn't assume that all agencies and agents representing follow the law. Okay, individuals, corporations can easily intercept all of your cell phone signals with very little risk of ever being caught. It is a great way to conduct prying eyes just because they don't like you. Maybe they want to blackmail you. Maybe they want to do business or corporate espionage against you. Maybe you're just a small mom-and-pop business, and somebody's very vindictive, and they just need a few inside little secrets and numbers that's been assigned to you, and dates and expiration dates and PIN numbers to really destroy you. So think about all that, ladies and gentlemen. And the agencies, by the way, have the ability, to turn a cell phone into a listening device or roving bug. Okay? Then that allows any agencies or, remember, individuals with a few hundred dollars to hear any conversations that take place near the cell phone even. Okay? They don't need an agency or individual access to the cell phone itself to, quote-unquote, plant a roving bug. They can initiate through your cell phone company. Okay, now roving bugs, of course, would allow some agency to hear the conversations near your cell phone even when it is turned off. Okay? So people have gone to the next step, removing their battery always when their cell phone is not actually being dialed and used, and hopefully for benefit and benefit only, to the owner of the cell phone. And guess what? That is even being defeated. Power chips, if you will, and other memory devices are getting backup power installed inside the circuitry. Okay? So that certain functions and prerequisites and programming is not lost. So removing the battery is only removing the main display functions. It's only shutting down your dialing ability, your transmission and receiving ability, but the circuitry is still on. Okay? Now, of course, your phone can also be used to track your locations. Okay? If your cell phone is on and has a signal, it's in contact with one or more towers in your area. An agency and even individuals with a few hundred dollars can monitor these connections to determine your physical location. No different than the old days of triangulating radio signals, ladies and gentlemen. Now in cities and areas, your urban areas and cities with high densities of cell phone towers, your location can be tracked incredibly precisely. In fact, within just a few yards nowadays of your exact location. And guess what? Currently there are no uniform legal standard to prevent or promote this kind or style of tracking. No precepts to protect you, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? Now, some courts do require agencies to meet the same low showing, at best, I would call it, that they would need to obtain a PIN, register, or trap and trace device. Okay? And some courts have required agencies to obtain a full-blown warrant supported by full, legitimate probable cause. Okay? Now, agencies and people can also go through your past cell phone records to determine locations at that time that your cell phone was turned on. Now, unfortunately, although I got a lot more information, we're wrapping it up for this evening. We'll cover it in the next broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, here in our series on If an Agent Comes Knocks at Your Door. Tonight, part four in that series. And again, Wednesday, the 23rd of June, 2010, with your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time, the website hourofthetime.com. My personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com, and the studio number in Arizona, 928-333-2942, and the studio number in Canada, 613-733-4324. Now, ladies and gentlemen, do not forget, we can only bring you this constant research and information and PDF offers and their speaking engagements on the road and expand and do more and more good all the time for freedom with your support. Hour of the Time is completely listener-supported. So go to our website, hourofthetime.com, and take a look at our hot shop with literally hundreds and hundreds of items for your research library that you can donate for. Now, I hope everyone took wonderful and detailed notes and has a safe and a studious evening.